and on digital radio and also online. It's 1 o'clock and this is David Cornett with a summary of the news. The authorities in Yemen say they're looking for more suspects in connection with two bombs which were found on flights heading for the United States. The packages were intercepted on Friday in the UK and in Dubai. A female student has been arrested and is being questioned. Qatar Airways has said the bomb, which was found in Dubai, had been carried from Yemen on two of its passenger flights. American officials have said there's no specific indication that there are any more parcels linked to this plot, but extra precautions had to be taken. Here, the Home Secretary, Theresa May, has said the handling and screening of all air cargo coming into Britain will have to be reviewed. Unaccompanied freight from Yemen has already been barred. Mrs. May said it was also important to keep up strict checks on passengers at UK airports. She said the bomb, which was discovered at East Midlands Airport, could have gone off at any time and could have brought down the plane which it was on. A bomb which was found at Belfast International Airport has been made safe. It had been left in a vehicle in a long-stay car park and is believed to have contained a flammable liquid. Police say another device was found in Lurgan on Friday and they've urged the public to be vigilant. In a statement, the Police Service of Northern Ireland said misguided individuals and groups were trying to drag the country back to mayhem and misery. 22 people have been injured in Turkey in what police think was a suicide bombing. The explosion happened in a central square in Istanbul. A bomb disposal team has discovered further suspect devices nearby. Cricket's governing body, the ICC, has upheld the suspensions of two Pakistan players who were accused of taking part in a betting scam. Mohammed Amir and Salman Butt have denied deliberately bowling no balls in a test against England. The allegations are still being investigated. And the weather, it'll be cloudy with showers across much of the UK this afternoon. It'll become dry in Northern Ireland and Scotland with some sunshine in western parts of Scotland. That's the BBC News and Weather at 1:02. And it's time now to join Catherine Bott for the Early Music Show, which today focuses on one of Vivaldi's best-known stage works.
Antonio Vivaldi once claimed to have written 94 operas, but fewer than 50 titles have been identified, and only 20 or so scores actually survive. Today, we're taking a look at one of those stage works, Orlando Furioso. I'm not going to follow the story through in order, although I will give you some idea of the convoluted plot a bit further in, but I'm aiming to give a flavour of the piece, aided by the insights of a singer who was involved in a complete recording of it, French countertenor Philippe Jaroussky. So, take your seat in the opera box and enjoy the breath-catchingly hectic overture to the opera that Vivaldi labelled a heroico-magical drama, Orlando Furioso.
Thank you.
ouverture to Vivaldi's opera Orlando Furioso, played by Ensemble Mathieus, conducted by Jean-Christophe Spinozzi. Here are the statistics. Orlando Furioso, Orlando in a Frenzy, was first performed in Venice in 1727. The libretto is by Grazio Braccioli, based on an epic poem of the same name from the year 1516 by the Italian poet Ariosto. Braccioli chose some of the exploits in Ariosto's poem to create the drama in the stage work. The real Orlando was Roland, an 8th-century military leader who served the Frankish warrior king Charlemagne. And his story is told in a huge, sprawling, 46-part poem of Christians versus Saracens, sorcery and seduction, secret weddings and concealed identity. You know the sort of thing. Grist to the mill of 18th-century opera composers. But I'm going to try to summarise the plot anyway. It'll sound a bit like the opening of an episode of Round the Horn, but the landscape of Operatopia is well worth a visit. Here goes. The action takes place on an enchanted island, home to old, hideous, deceitful sorceress Alcina. Brought to its shores by operatic fate are the famous Christian knight Orlando, who loves the fair Angelica, princess of Cathay, who has disappeared on the voyage. Sadly for him, Angelica, who hasn't done anything of the sort, of course, is herself in love with a humble Saracen hero, Medoro, and at curtain up, it seems he has been lost at sea. Another Christian knight, Ruggiero, is loved by action maiden Bradamante, and these two symbolise the founders of the noble house of Este. Ariosto dedicated his poem to Cardinal Ippolito d'Este. The course of true love certainly doesn't run smooth, you'll not be dumbfounded to learn. Naughty old Alcina magics herself into a beautiful maiden to enchant and seduce Ruggiero, thus infuriating Bradamante and sending their great romance off the rails. Angelica's and Medoro's love for each other is constantly jeopardised by Orlando's vengeful jealousy, leading Angelica into morally dubious conduct as, with Alcina's help, she tricks poor Orlando into believing he's on the track of the Fountain of Youth. When he stumbles instead on the evidence of his beloved's wedding, he is driven mad. The two big dramatic roles are Orlando and Alcina, but it's the noble, courageous, compassionate Bradamante and Ruggiero who are the real heroes of this epic tale. They encourage Angelica to repent and invoke good magic to bring Alcina's wicked reign to an end, thus enabling Orlando to shake off his frenzy and resign himself to giving Angelica and Medoro his blessing, as Alcina is escorted off the premises swearing vengeance. A plot like this gives Vivaldi some golden opportunities for lyrical and dramatic expression, and he doesn't waste them. Let's hear an early example from the opening scene of Act One. Angelica has confided in Alcina about her lost love Medoro. When Alcina kindly offers to restore him to her, Angelica sings the aria, Un raggio di speme, a ray of hope soothes my heart and comforts my soul.
Un raggio di speme. Thank you.
A ray of hope soothes my heart and comforts my soul, but a flame of dark fear arises that robs my heart of tranquillity. The aria Un raggio di speme from Vivaldi's opera Orlando Furioso, sung by Veronica Cangemi in the role of Angelica, from the 2004 recording by Ensemble Matthieus, conducted by Jean-Christophe Spinozzi. Singing the role of Ruggero on that recording is the French countertenor Philippe Jaroussky, who made a tremendous impact at the 2010 Proms, along with Spinozzi and Ensemble Mathieu, with numbers from Orlando Furioso making up quite a huge chunk of their concert. Everyone gave it their all that night to great effect, but singing opera in the concert hall is very different from performing on the stage. When we talked recently to Philippe, the first question was, does he consider himself a seasoned treader of the boards?
I sang a lot of operas in concert, but not so much on stage. Two at the beginning of my career, La Verità in Cimento and Catone in Utica by Vivaldi. But Orlando Furioso, of course, it's quite a legend because everybody has in memory the incredible performance on stage by Marilyn Horne a few years ago now. It's true that there is not a lot of staging of Vivaldi operas, of course, much more about Handel operas. Most of the time, practically always the same operas by Handel. And I think that if we have to put on stage few operas by Vivaldi, it's sure that Orlando Furioso is one of the most interesting because of the magic side. I think it's very interesting for a stage director to play with this. And because of the characters, and of course, the music is one of the most beautiful composed by Vivaldi, naturally.
Philippe Jaroussky, speaking to the Early Music Show recently. We'll be hearing more from him throughout the programme, but first, I thought it might be nice to hear something of the glorious singing of Marilyn Horne that he mentioned just then. She recorded the title role of Orlando in the 1970s, with Claudio Scimone conducting I Solisti Veneti. This is the aria Nel profondo cieco mondo, in the depths of this dark world.
Oh!
Marilyn Horne as Orlando in that 1978 recording of Vivaldi's opera Orlando Furioso by I Solisti Veneti, conducted by Claudio Scimone. Marilyn Horne is unmistakably female, no matter how heroic her trouser role, and Vivaldi wrote the role of Orlando not for a castrato, but for a contralto, Lucia Lancetti. He was really asserting himself against the prevailing tide here. One priestly commentator wrote that the constellation of musical fanaticism so dominates that the most sober of senators pay court to eunuchs. Vivaldi wasn't prepared to sacrifice his entire budget to the exorbitant fees charged by the castrati. He wanted to be in control. But Lucia Lancetti had real star quality and was making a tremendous name for herself throughout Italy in the 1720s. And the dramatically charged role of Orlando is a gift for any singer, with an extended mad scene coming up later in the programme. The rest of the Orlando Furioso cast for that first performance was hand-picked by the composer. The Perugian castrato Giovanni Andrea Tassi played the role of the quiet hero Ruggero. We're about to hear Philippe Jaroussky in the role. Wouldn't he prefer instead to get his teeth into the furious Orlando?
I'm very happy to do Ruggero. I can imagine myself singing Orlando. It's not my type of voice and not totally my personality. It's much better for Marie-Nicole. But I'm very happy to sing Ruggero because it's true that it's quite sweet person. It's quite dreaming. It's fitting quite well with my own personality. But what is interesting, you know, in the first version, the version we knew before the recording we have done with Jean-Christophe Spinozzi, there is only two arias. But we found again a third aria, which is much more virtuosic and much more is stronger. And the character is stronger. And I think I like it because if you are just singing the two first arias, you have the impression of a very fragile character. With the last aria, you have again a balance and you can develop more the character, which is quite beautiful musically, but it's not the more important character dramatically.
Thank you.
Just as the waves become a terrifying whirlpool, so your besieged heart rages and cannot find peace. Philippe Jaroussky as Ruggiero, showing compassion for the deranged Orlando and scorn for Angelica, whose cruelty has made the greatest of heroes lose his mind. Well, we've heard something of Orlando himself. There was one of Angelica's numbers at the beginning of the programme, and there we heard from Ruggiero. But what of the other characters? Philippe Jaroussky.
The other main part of the opera, Alcina, is a very, very beautiful part and composed for Anna Giraud. Of course, Vivaldi was in love with her and he gave to her a lot of beautiful parts. But if you compare technically, it's not so difficult. We know that Anna Giraud had a quite small range and she was not the best singer of her time, but she was a great actress. Of course, for this production, we will have the chance to have a great actress and a great singer, Jennifer Larmour, for this part. But technically, it's not so difficult. What is interesting in Alcina is all the different colors. And what I think is very interesting, that also Alcina is to be very touching, because she's losing his love and she's becoming more and more human during the opera. And I think that's very interesting also to put this changement on stage.
What can be sweeter and more joyful than a loving heart? The sorceress Alcina feigns a softer side. The singer was Jennifer Larmour, once again from the recording directed by Jean-Christophe Spinozzi of Vivaldi's opera Orlando Furioso, which is the focus of today's early music show with me, Catherine Bott. Now, this opera wasn't the first time that Vivaldi had tackled the Orlando story. 13 years earlier, in 1714, he'd produced Orlando Finto Pazzo, Orlando Feigns Madness. It focuses on a completely different set of events taken from Ariosto's poem, but it's thought that the librettist may have been the same for both of Vivaldi's musical settings. That's Grazio Bracioli. Sadly, we don't know very much about Bracioli. His name certainly doesn't crop up elsewhere. Here's Philippe Jaroussky again on the quality of his writing.
The libretto is fantastic. And what is incredible in Orlando, maybe what is absolutely new in the world of the opera seria, the main part has only 3 arias, in fact. It has 3 arias at the beginning of the opera, and all the second part is just speaking in recitative. Of course, he has this incredible mad scene, but he's practically not singing anymore. And that's very modern. For Vivaldi, it was not possible to make sing a character who is going totally crazy, you know. It was, I'm sure, dramatically a fantastic idea. You have this incredible moment where Orlando is always speaking in French. That's totally crazy. It gave a humanity also at the character quite strong. I'm very happy also to do it because, you know, Marie-Nicole Lemieux is one of my best friends as a singer, and what she's doing in this scene, particularly at the end of the opera, is just breathtaking. It's fantastic, and I'm sure that people will be very surprised by the modernity of the music and of the text also.
No, no, ti dico no, forse pretendi ombra squallida e nera di spaventarmi. No, no, non importa. Morda credea la crudeltà Nerone, è sorto da Cheronte, volea che io cantassi il Lazzarone. Ma morta so ben io che non a me, che mi
the astonishing Marie-Nicole Lemieux in the title role of Orlando in a Frenzy, in that heartbreaking mad scene from Vivaldi's opera. As I said at the beginning of the programme, Vivaldi once claimed to have written 94 operas, but there's only physical evidence for a small percentage of that claim. Like most composers of his time, though, Vivaldi was a great recycler. He would take music from one piece and use it again in another for a variety of reasons, among which we do have to admit this one, getting his commissions out quickly and redeeming his fee. So, do parts of Orlando Furioso fall into that recycled category as well? Here's Philippe Jaroussky again.
It's true that a lot of arias inside Orlando, you can hear them in other operas by Vivaldi. But Vivaldi was a very big specialist of this. You know, there is a manager of the opera in Firenze writing to Vivaldi, you know, we want a new opera by you, but really try to compose new arias this time, because you are always putting old arias in new operas and we want new music. And it's true that Vivaldi, when he feels that one aria is very successful, is always very tempted to put it in some other operas. But I think there is some also treasures you can find only in Orlando, particularly for my part, for Ruggiero. Ruggiero is not one of the most important characters inside the opera, but I have this chance to sing my first aria at the end of the first act. I'm the last character to enter inside the story, and I have the chance to sing one of the most beautiful slow aria that Vivaldi has composed, with a magic flute part. Really, I'm just happy to sing this opera just for this aria, practically. It's a so wonderful aria. Each time I'm singing this aria, it's a special experience for me.
Thank you.
Philippe Jaroussky singing his favourite aria from Orlando Furioso as a fond Ruggiero declares his love for Bradamante. The flautist is Jean-Marc Goujon. An enchantingly simple vocal line matched with the trickiest of instrumental obligatos, a Vivaldi speciality. How does the orchestral writing in his operas differ from all those famous concertos?
The orchestra is based on the strings. There is few wind instruments, and I was speaking before about this marvelous aria Soldate mio dolce amore, which is pure genius. It's the first aria composed by Vivaldi for flute solo, and it's just a masterpiece. But mainly the originality is probably about the writing of the strings. In some arias, I'm thinking about Sorgere lato nembo, which is really a masterpiece because it's a tempest aria, and the dialogue between the strings and the voice is particularly rich in this aria, for example. And sometimes we are saying about Vivaldi that it's quite an easy composer and it's not so rich like Handel, for example. But when he decides really to put more complexity inside his writing, he's totally able to do it. Vivaldi is really able to change his writing in function of the text, in function of the situations. You have a lot of varieties inside this opera, naturally.
Philippe Jaroussky in an interview recorded recently. Well, in an opera set on an island with travellers feared lost at sea and a sorceress who can alter the weather, you'd expect the strings to play up a perfect storm. We've already heard Orlando's mania compared to a rough sea. Here he is, like King Lear, contending with the fretful elements.
Thank you.
Marie-Nicole Lemieux as Orlando, tempest-tossed, but longing only for the clouds to part. It's fair to say that the composer of Orlando Furioso is much better remembered today for his concertos and dazzling instrumental showcase pieces than he is for his stagecraft. Does Philippe Jaroussky think Vivaldi is a little bit hard done by?
It's true that Vivaldi is much more famous for his instrumental pieces because he was a violinist and we know him like a virtuoso of the violin. But the vocal repertory was quite neglected. There is a lot of church music, beautiful motetos, beautiful operas. And we always thought it's true that his genius was much more on the violin than on the writing of the voice. And more you are singing Vivaldi, more you are convinced of the contrary, naturally. And even if you compare them, the vocal pieces to other vocal pieces of other great master of the time, you can sometimes compare different musical version of the same text, for example, with the great text, with Olimpiade, with sometimes you can have the Pergolese versions, Vivaldi versions, the Porpora versions, even the Handel version and other composer. And most of the times, I'm very surprised that Vivaldi was the most interesting version. Why it was so neglected, I think really Vivaldi became so famous now because of the Four Seasons. He suffered of this fame. But now I think things are changing a lot. And now we have a new revolution, of course, that we have opened a door with Vivaldi. But more and more, I can feel that there is still a lot of other composers, naturally, to defend. And even all these other composers can help us to understand more Vivaldi after.
Philippe Jaroussky. Well, we've heard his characterization of the noble Ruggiero in his first fond aria and his more assertive third and last one. I thought we should complete the set. In Act Two, the penitent Ruggiero fears that Bradamante will never forgive him for the seeming infidelity that Alcina tricked him into. So he offers his breast to her brandished sword. Don't ask. Die, cruel man, she says, but in this embrace, leaving the way clear for him to sing this gorgeous aria about how lovely it would be to expire on her breast. Mio dolce caro ben, Ruggero's aria Che bel morir t'in sen from Vivaldi's Orlando Furioso, sung by Philippe Jaroussky, who's also made such a fascinating verbal contribution to today's early music show. My thanks to him. Time for one more piece of music from the opera, once again in the recording made by Ensemble Mathieus, directed by Jean-Christophe Spinozzi. And we can make good an omission. Baroque operas don't tend to feature much work for the chorus, and Vivaldi's are no exception. But he does give massed voices a few short bursts in Orlando Furioso, and when all the ends of the plot are neatly tied up, we get a cheerful final chorus. Here's how the scene goes. Alcina, demagicked. Bah! I'm off to get the Furies on my side. Bradamante, see, Orlando, you've done a good thing. Orlando, finally, everything's becoming clear to me again. Angelica, I'm so ashamed. Orlando, no, take pleasure in the love of a good man. Blessings on you and Medoro. Astolfo, who hasn't been mentioned before, because his job is just to pop up every now and then throughout the opera to say things like this, wise are those who learn from their mistakes. Chorus, descend, O Cupids, to crown constancy and fidelity with the rewards of love. And so we say farewell to Operatopia.
Closing scene from Vivaldi's opera Orlando Furioso, performed there by Ensemble Mathieus, directed by Jean-Christophe Spinozzi. And that ends today's early music show, which was presented by Catherine Bott and produced in Manchester by Les Pratt. In next Saturday's programme, Catherine will be introducing highlights of a concert given in the Polish city of Jarosław by the Ensemble Sekwencja. That's the early music show next Saturday at the same time, just after the 1 o'clock news.
The courage to take on the big questions.
People shouldn't have to think if they want the best of a cultural offering, they've got to come to London.
The charisma to convince.
Poetry should be on equal terms with prose in all public discourse.
On BBC Radio 3, Free Thinking, a weekend of debate, interviews and bright ideas. Kevin MacLeod, Fiona Shaw, leading artists, thinkers and public figures, and an audience at the Sage Gateshead. Free Thinking, starting with the author Dame Jacqueline Wilson, Friday night at 9 on BBC Radio 3. And go online to bbc.co.uk/radio3 for a lot more to get your head around.
Well, now it's just gone 2 o'clock and time for Fiona Talkington to bring us 2 hours of your Radio 3 requests.
Hello again.
How on earth did Sir Arthur Sullivan have time to write so much music? Asks Mr. P. Ashford from Berkhamsted. And he's asked to hear this part song, which is perhaps appropriate for the day we turn the clocks back. The long day closes. Shadow is round at eaves, the long day closes. Music by Sir Arthur Sullivan, sung by the group Laudibus, conducted by Michael Brewer, and requested by Mr. P. Ashford from Berkhamsted. Pure Victoriana, he says, but none the worse for that. Yvonne Vinnell, and I hope I've pronounced your name okay, Yvonne. Yvonne comes from Tunbridge Wells, and she's got a favourite feline request for us this afternoon. The composer is something of a mystery. Rossini was in the frame for quite a few years, but these days we think this bizarre piece of Catiana is the work of one of his admiring contemporaries.
Thank you. Felicity Lott and Anne Murray with pianist Graham Johnson. Rossini's Cat Duet, especially for Yvonne Vinnell, and Feline Friends from Tunbridge Wells. Ian Astle was in the audience at the Victor Hugo International Music Festival in Guernsey. In fact, you might have heard the magnificent performance given by the Eben Quartet in the lunchtime concert last week. While we were there, Ian passed on a request for us to include a piece which he says is strong, strident and full of confidence, Janáček's Sinfonietta, which was first performed in 1927, dedicated to the Czech armed forces and meant to portray man's courage to fight for victory, as well as his spiritual beauty and joy.